Good evening. And now, the Inspirational Quarterly.
Hello, and welcome to the Inspirational Quarterly, a podcast that comes to you about the USA Today bestselling authors, StarCraft Ghost Nova, and essentially Keith R.A. DeCandido is our god here, and we worship him. Hi out there, Keith.
Just to clarify, I feel like last week we opened up a potential kind of competing godhood on this podcast when Mike Stucca was brought into the lore. I'm not saying that Mike Stucca is on Keith's level, but I do think that there is a reasonable consideration for putting both of them in sort of the same ballpark of conversation. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Mike Stucca is now a good character, I feel like, from the podcast.
Who would Mike Stucca be in StarCraft Ghost Nova if Mike Stucca was a character in StarCraft Ghost Nova?
Who would he be? I mean, he would be Mal, surely.
Yeah, I like Mike Stucca more than I like... Okay, here's the thing. In terms of how much I like them, Mike Stucca is more like Garth Duke.
Of course. You know? Yeah. But I don't think that he's like a Garth Duke kind of guy.
Well, we don't know that.
That's true.
And here's the thing. We don't know that Garth Duke isn't actually out there doing vital investigative research that is blowing the lid off of vital new stories and keeping the world's consciousness really engaged with what's actually going on. You know, Keith never goes out of his way to say that, and that when Garth Duke isn't swimming naked in the punch bowl at teenage girls' birthday parties, that he specifically is not an investigative journalist.
Right.
Right? I mean, not from anything I remember reading in the book.
No. I mean, he's not ruled it out, basically.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And hey, maybe this is a good question to ask Keith.
What?
Or maybe not,
what
so that we can leave it.
Question,
we, maybe we don't, because that way we can always leave it as like a possibility, right?
Right.
Is always a thing that it could be, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that that's in terms of the amount of that I like them. It's more like Garth.
So if you were gonna make this book into a play, like a theatrical version.
Yes,
of
I like
this.
It. Yeah.
Would you cast Mike Stucca as Garth Duke?
There's two. See, here's the thing, right? There's two. I see a kind of Robert Frost path diverges in the woods here.
Okay.
And one is where Mike Stucca plays Garth Duke, and the other is where, because Mike Stucca doesn't need to play a detective. Mike Stucca is already a detective himself all day.
That
right?
is true.
He wants to come to the theater and assume an identity, a persona, right? So he's either Mike Stucca plays Garth Duke, or Mike Stucca plays himself, the character Mike Stucca who has been added into StarCraft Ghost Nova. The story.
Yeah.
Right? So, and when Keith is writing the script for the play, he adds Mike Stucca and he weaves Mike Stucca kind of as like a through line, you know, throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's really between those two.
Right.
For me. Which of those would you go with?
I was kind of thinking that like Mike Stucca could be like this, like he could be like a figure like us in the play, whereby like he's almost like a meta commentary going.
Ooh.
Right?
Wait. Are you? What if you and I are like the grandpa and the kid from Princess Bride?
Right. Exactly. So good.
Like the play. Like the play opens up, and you know, wait, who's the grandpa? Who's the kid?
Can I be the grandpa?
You could be the grandpa because you asked.
Okay.
All right. So see, it opens up, and I'm like, pop, pop. I need a story.
What's that accent? Where is that from? It's like a it's my Michael theater.
It's my theater accent. I was just
like tiny Michael Caine.
tell me the story again. It's my favorite bedtime story. Every time you tell it, it gets better and better.
Now look here, Sonny Jim.
Sonny Jim. Wow. This is like this crusty old grandpa who can't be fucked to tell the whole story.
Yeah.
And just kind of zips through it.
Yeah, he's like, shut the hell up.
Grandpa's got shit to do.
And then Mike Succa is like the kind of narration voice who's also like, you know, doing the
Hang on. So there's two different meta narratives going on.
Yeah. So like you need to have like, you know, I don't know, like a kind of authoritative, like there. Yeah, I guess maybe like we're talking about like a Mary Shelley level of ways to get in the story.
Look, this is important. Okay. Are we a construction? Are you and I, the grandpa and grandchild, a construction of Mike Stucca's telling, or is Mike Stucca a construction of our telling?
No. We're a construction of Mike Stucca.
Okay, so it opens with Mike Stucca.
Yeah,
who personally takes the stage to set the scene for the grandpa and child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right. Then it's
the,
like
the
then...
child who is terminally ill. And... yeah, right.
And then there's like, yeah.
Can the child die halfway through the story and grandpa just doesn't notice and just keeps on kind of doing the story?
Sure, why not, Davey?
Okay.
We've gone way off track here already.
We are supposed to read the book.
You are supposed to read the book today. Do you want to read the epilogue or should we?
Is there anything more? Okay, but is there anything more about Mike Stucca's meta narration of the play, of the theatrical version of Stargrass Post Nova that you'd like to talk about?
You know what? I would like to talk about the fact that Mike Stucca would be much more interested in like how many, you know, motorcycles there are. Or hover bikes there are in this, and like, you know, he would be interested in all of the statistics, and like he'd be reading out like the dry numbers of everything in this, and like
finding
those more interesting than literally anything else in the whole book.
What if he's just also a character in the play and narrating the play at the same time? You know, he could be Constantino, and then he could nerd out about the hover bikes and everything, you know, but also be narrating descriptions of the hover bikes.
I guess so, but like also like Davey, like how confused would the audience be? I mean, I guess
it's not about art isn't about the audience. Fuck the audience.
Well,
all right.
I guess
the audience doesn't know shit.
The same amount of confused the audience is currently now that they're listening to the podcast.
Anyone who's still listening to this podcast has acclimated to the chaos, right? They're processing and metabolizing it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas the theater goers will have no idea what
they're like dogs we've trained to open the door.
Exactly. Hey, and speaking of which, a couple of dogs opened up the door this week and sent us some emails.
Oh shit, really?
A quick email from Spencer Saunders, who says, howdy, just wanted to say I was delighted by your comments about people so opposed to gender identifications that they had yeeted it. Gender is something I've been thinking about a lot over the past year or so, and yeeting it basically sums up how I feel at the moment. So thanks for that.
Excellent.
And thank you, Spencer. Yeet on, you crazy diamond, as we say here on the Inspirational Quarterly. A mantra.
Yeet that gender.
Yeet it with your greatest yeet skills. And then, who do you think wrote back to us this week? If you said Subsurian, you're absolutely right. Hey,
oh my
Subsurian.
God, why Subsurian? Thanks for
sending us another email. Subsurian says, at the risk of turning this week into mailbag extravaganza part two, which who knows, maybe, we don't know yet, Kara and I.
This
is
like a kind of public correspondence between us and Subsurian.
Yeah, like Subsurian, how you doing these days? Like, what's going on, man? You know, like, just
encourage him.
It's our podcast. It's our podcast. It's not about the audience. Fuck the audience.
Oh my god.
Okay, Subsurian has some follow ups on our comments from last time. Okay, Sergeant Hurtley is indeed in the Ghost Academy manga as a regular character. Why Keith being into karate makes sense is. Hartley kind of serves as a reason to have martial arts training chapters. Aha. Uh-huh. Mm. And yes, he continues to be known for having silly axioms he tells the students. Subsurian, I'm going to need to know what some of those silly axioms are. Not that you are obligated to do anything for us, because you are not, but I'd like to know what some of those silly axioms are. Director Bick also not only shows up, but has a fairly major arc in the comics as well. And they do flashback scenes for Kalerchian and Fagin and some of the events seen in the book. Whoa. So there's visual.
Oh, there's shit. Like, there's a comic. There's
visual versions of shit we've seen go down. I need to see this.
Oh my God, me too.
They also tackle public outcry against the Academy and how it is training its students, though more in the angle of their treatment and recruitment methods. Okay. The manga is also something that may be worth asking Keith about, because he outlined the general story and characters and wrote the first issue of it. Then Blizzard decided to go in a different direction, removed Keith, and brought in David Gerard of Star Trek fame to write the next two issues. But then Tokyo Pop went bankrupt 3 issues in, so the entire run was canned with a lot clearly left to go, with only some brief allusions to what happened in those missing issues in the next book. So, personally, I've always been curious what Keith's extended plans for the story were. Hmm, interesting. I'm making a little note here.
Hmm.
Ask Keith about the StarCraft Ghost manga. Okay. On the Titanic equivalent in the StarCraft... On what the Titanic equivalent in the StarCraft universe is for fine liquor, and we recorded this episode days ago, and I already barely remember what this is in reference to. The answer ends up actually being Tarsanis's destruction. Tarsanis was also known for making fine whiskeys, and after the planet was annihilated, they could never replicate it, so Mengsk kept some of the last remaining bottles. It'd be like if Scotland got erased, sorry, Kara, and having to replicate the spirits made there. Antigua Prime was also infested by the Zerg, then purified by the Protoss, so I assume all the Antiguan buffalo meat ended up with the same rarity, unless the Zerg infested them too and made them into a delicious hallucinogenic strain. Who knows? The Inspirational Quarterly could be the push Blizzard needs to bring back the Antiguan buffaloes. Thank you. I'm glad someone gets us. It is an interesting idea that what people love so much about the Antiguan buffalo is that the Zerg, it's like Zerg particles in them. Like, yeah. They're eating delicious hallucinogenic alien.
Yeah. I love it.
Just so you know, just know, you may not get on the USA Today bestseller list for games, but you'll always have the coveted award of most watched podcast endorsed by the StarCraft Wiki.
Aww, that's Subsurian. So sweet.
Looking forward to what sentence you read this week. Aww.
We do have to read one.
You're really, Subsurian, you're not helping. You're not making it better. You're not, you gave us a lot of material here in this email. Like, we could easily spend an hour just talking about this, as far as I'm concerned. I like the idea that Mengsk has this collection of whiskey from the collapse of Tarsanis, which he was, like, there for. And I think, maybe, I don't know. And then he beer bongs them just because he can.
He beer bongs everything.
They're just, it's the finest whiskey across the galaxy. And he just gets up in the morning, and every morning he beer bongs one of them until they're all gone.
Yep.
Dang. So that's what I'm imagining. Yeah, we should see if we can get this manga, because I would love to see the visualizations of
I'm like super into like the actual, you know, what they imagine these characters look like.
Yeah, right.
And if they differ dramatically from the horrible things in my imagination.
I mean, they surely do. It's got to be a lot different.
Yeah,
it's almost, sure. Like, do we even want to? Like, are you sure you want to know?
I really.
Are you sure
know.
You want to potentially change? Because this would change. This would retroactively impact our entire understanding of the book and all the time we've spent on it.
I mean, it might, but it might not. I don't know. I'm interested.
All right, we'll look into it after this. Well, thank you, Subsurian, for your continuing to distract us from reading StarCraft Ghost Nova, and just out here doing our best that we can be for the beloved fan base of the StarCraft Wiki. So,
yeah.
Okay. Should we read the book?
Let's do it.
Should we actually read the epilogue?
Let's do it.
We are on page 294 of StarCraft Ghost Nova. There are 10 pages left. We have just begun the epilogue. And the epilogue begins with that classic William Butler Yeats quote, "The darkness drops again." Ooh. The average Ghost Academy trainee graduated after 4 years. Attempts to accelerate the program had proven disastrous, as rushing trainees of this nature simply resulted in bad ghosts, which did the Dominion no good. However, the program was such that an above-average trainee could graduate sooner, maybe in as few as 3 years. A below-average trainee simply was removed from the academy permanently. Does that strike you as weird? That they're like, we have a strict 4-year period?
Yes, I was just going to say. That is so
except
weird.
For people who are better or worse than that? Like, yeah. That just sounds like you're making it up as you go.
Like, just, like, so wait, 4 years unless you graduate sooner. Like, that was
or later, point. Or don't. Yeah.
Or you don't graduate at all. Like, what?
Yeah. No, you just have, you know, kind of a, they've yeeted the spectrum is what they've done mm-hmm. here. Yeah. In the entire history of the Academy, under two different human governments, only one trainee had made it out in as few as 2.5 years. Kara, who do you think that person is? That's right. It's Malcolm Kalerchian. No, it's not Malcolm. It's Nova Terra. Not that she was out yet. As she stood in the jungles of Tirador 8 trying to figure out the best way to kill Cliff Nadanner, she found herself wishing this was over and that she was brain panned already. But first, she had to kill Nadanner. We are back to where we fucking started, boys and
Holy
girls.
Holy crap.
The introduction which of this book, which we began reading in like February or something of last year, or the prologue rather, where Nova was running through the jungle with her bacon suit. Remember that?
Yeah, love the bacon suit.
Something she had
kill in and then later eat.
Right. Right, right. Well, she landed in it, right? Because she was fired through a cannon into the jungle in a pod made of bacon.
Yeah.
She had almost laughed in Emperor Mengsk's face when he summoned her to his office. He had been wearing a psi screen, of course. It wouldn't do for his thoughts to get out. And had said to her, "You've done quite well for yourself, Miss Terra." As if she hadn't already known that. Nova is the valley, still the valley girl we always knew. She's right?
Duh.
Like, I'm the best Ghost Academy recruit that you ever had, okay? I'm more psychic than any of the other psychics that are here at the Academy, okay? All right, do you even know?
You sound like you're gonna throw up on your own words.
That's like the Valley Girl thing, right? Is they're like almost because they're, you know, because what's because they're all like bulimic and whatever, you know.
Wow.
I mean, okay, all right, let's back up a second. They're not all bulimic, but some of them do throw up from time to time.
Some of them do throw up.
And that's just what I'm channeling. I'm channeling the fact that sometimes Valley Girls do throw up.
Right.
Right? This is Mengsk. One thing we've added to the Ghost Academy training since we took it over from the late unlamented Confederacy is a graduation exercise, a field mission, as it were, that shows you're able to apply the classroom to the real world. This is especially an issue with you, who went through the program so fast. Mengsk then stopped to beer bong one of the bottles of precious whiskey from Tarsanis. Nova had said nothing. This was the Emperor, after all, the one who had wanted Mal dead, the one who'd stopped the Confederacy all by himself. If she was honest with herself, she knew that he was also indirectly responsible for her family's death, since the Sons of Korhal had inspired a huge number of copycat rebel groups, including the one run by Cliff Nadanner. So, she had been rather surprised by Mengsk's next words. "Your assignment is to kill Cliff Nadanner. We've marked his location to Tirador 8. He's been agitating against the Terran Dominion, and it has to stop." He said some more things, but Nova barely paid attention to any of them. Heck yeah, Nova. You do what you want.
She's an anarchist.
Is she an anarchist Valley Girl?
I mean, that would be like a Clueless type Valley Girl, right? Like,
Are the Valley Girls from... I don't think of the girls from Clueless as being anarchists.
I mean, it's weird because, like, what's interesting about Clueless is they tried to kind of break out of the idea that, you know, Valley Girls are dumb, they don't have any use, they're not kind, they have no empathy. I guess, like, that's what I'm going for. But yes, I admit, we have no evidence that they're anarchists.
Well, okay, when we say we have no evidence, what you mean is the events that unfold over the course of the movie?
Yeah.
Because that is all the evidence. That is 100% of the evidence. Kara, I don't know how to tell you this. Clueless wasn't a documentary.
That's true, because in that movie, the dad says, "Everywhere in LA is 20 minutes. And let me tell you, I've tested that out."
Oh my god, I forgot that was I can't believe anyone said that in a fucking movie. Like, that's outrageous.
Anywhere in LA, 20 minutes.
That goes to show you how wildly removed from reality the movie Clueless is.
I mean, it could have been true back then. I don't know what, I can't remember what.
The 90s?
Yeah, like, it could have been true in the 90s.
No, there's no way that was true in the 90s. I don't believe it.
Yeah, but anyway, it's my experience that anywhere in LA takes an hour. Like anywhere. Yes. Takes an hour.
It's the opposite. You go down the street in LA and it will take you an hour. Yes, absolutely.
Like even if I'm going from Playa Vista to Culver City, which are next to each other, it's probably gonna take an hour. So
Here's the other possibility. Maybe time worked differently in the 90s. That's another.
Maybe time was warped somehow.
Yeah, time inflation, right?
Right.
Like how they say, back when grandpa was a kid, I bought my car for $3, right? Like, and that's the dad, Back when the dad was a kid, you could drive anywhere in LA in 3 minutes, But now it takes a whole 20 minutes to get anywhere in LA.
Yeah, I mean, just,
what,
yeah, 20 what minutes are we, is what not are we, a realistic
what are we
talk, time.
What are we talking about? I don't know what, I don't
I
know.
I don't know, we got sidetracked by the realisticness of Clueless.
Not a realistic, I'm just going to put it at not a realistic movie.
Okay.
I don't think. But I definitely don't think there's anything, to my understanding of anarchism, I think of very little in Clueless as being a movie about anarchism.
We still don't know though if they are or not, because there's no evidence.
Join us next week when we will be watching all of Clueless live on the air.
Oh my god.
And discussing the presence of anarchism.
We would get so many more listeners if we just did that.
More listeners?
Yeah.
We dropped listeners hard when I started watching Family Guy. I mean, I went and looked at our episode by episode, and it was like, oh my god, I can find it, but it was like we lost a bunch of listeners. Oh my god, I don't have the numbers here. Okay, all right. So when I started, we had 136 listeners when we brought up Family Guy for the first time. And by the time it ended, we're in the mid-90s. So,
wow! Oh my god!
So roughly a third of our listenership was like, no, I this is not what I was here
that
for.
That is so funny, Davey.
So I'm just saying, I don't think it would necessarily be the thing our listenership wants.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that they probably hate you personally for doing that.
You wanted to do it. You wanted to I was the one who made us talk about Family Guy, but you want to talk about Clueless for sure.
That's true. But what I'm saying is Clueless is a way more popular choice. We probably would have got more, word of mouth for Clueless.
The numbers don't lie, okay? Family Guy is watched by millions of people every week that it's out or something like that.
But it's clear to me that the StarCraft and Family Guy fandoms do not cross over.
So you're just grasping at new straws now? Maybe they're into this thing. Could it be this?
I mean, I think the chances of StarCraft fans and Clueless fans crossing over are greater.
Oh my god, I don't see it.
I see it.
I'm sorry, I don't see it. If you're a mega fan of both StarCraft and Clueless, write us at theinspirationalquarterly@gmail.com. Okay. He had said more things, but Nova had barely paid attention to any of them. Besides, she had known that everything he said would be in a file prepared for her perusal. Nadanner, the man who ordered my family killed. That's my Valley Girl voice. Interestingly enough, Mengsk had not mentioned her family at all. She still wondered if he knew or not. Not that she cared all that much. Whatever the reason, Nova had found it fitting that the last mission she'd undergo as herself, so to speak, was to kill the man who'd been responsible for destroying her life. Good luck, Miss Tara. Thank you, sir, she said with all the politeness her tutors had taught her during her first 15 years, skills that she was surprised hadn't atrophied in the 3 years since she'd used them last. I guess I could have tried harder to make that sound more polite, but
it sounded kind of sarcastic.
Maybe that's as good as Constantina was able to do with Nova. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, well, I don't know what to do. She just sounds kind of weird all the time.
Yeah. Just like she's swallowing something every time she talks.
Yeah, right. She's swallowing thoughts.
Yeah, thoughts.
That's why. It's because they all thoughts enter through the mouth, and that's how she psychically telepaths them.
Yeah,
into her brain, like, through the throat.
Anywhere to thoughts is 20 minutes.
In my day, thoughts used to take 5 minutes to think. But now they take 20 minutes to think. Then they brought her to Tirador 8. Nidanner had started telling another story. Wait, what? It was an even bigger lie than the previous two. Did Keith just, like, hard bring us back to literally 300 pages ago? Like, I'm rereading this. Then they brought her to Tirador 8. Nidanner had started telling another story. It was an even bigger lie than the previous two. Are we supposed to, is this supposed to be a thing that we remember what this was about?
I think, like, was, like, Nidanner broadcasting his thoughts to her? And that's what he's referring to? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but this was literally in the prologue.
Yeah.
Hang on. I'm trying to go back to the prologue here to see. There's Nidanner. There's a man. She looks for the next 2 hours. Nova ran through the jungle. She reached the dead zone. She could hear Nadanner's thoughts as clearly as if he'd been whispering in her ear. He'd finished singing. Okay. And was now telling a story of one of his exploits in the Confederate Marines before he got fed up, quit, and started his revolution. A story that Nova knew was about 90% fabrication. He had been in the Marines, and he had been on Antigua Prime once, but that was where his story's intersection with reality ended. Okay, that sentence that I just read you was on page 7. Of this
book. So we were expected to remember all that?
290 pages later, Nidanner had started telling another story. It was an even bigger lie than the previous two.
Wow.
Wow. That's some faith in the fucking audience.
Yeah, like, that's like giving your audience homework and expecting them to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, admittedly, we just did the homework.
We just did it, so we proved.
We literally just did it. It was not hard. No. But I was offended that I was asked to do something.
Yeah, like, I was really offended that, like, someone had asked us to, like, you know, undertake effort.
I did not start this podcast in order to have to think. And if there's one thing my actions have demonstrated clearly over the last 56 episodes, is that I haven't done
thinking.
Not a lot of thinking has really happened here. So even having to go back to page 7, I'm a little resentful over it. All right. So we're back now to Nova's in the jungle. Cliff Nidanner is telling the story. Nova came to a decision. The exact location of Nidanner and his people was a few meters below a metal hatch that was hidden by the overgrowth of the jungle, as well as the dampening field that had led her here. Oh, if this just goes into Lost, that would be sick. Wait, this Lost was happening... Lost was like 2007, and this was 2006.
Oh.
So this was right before Lost. So
everyone was inspired by Lost, by this book.
No, Lost, Lost was inspired by this section from StarCraft Ghost Nova. Reaching out with her mind, she ripped out the overgrowth and tossed it aside. Then, using the techniques they'd taught her at the academy, she looked for teak traps, defenses against telekinetic tampering. Booby traps that would go off right in Nova's face if she wasn't careful.
Okay, so this is the most excited I've been throughout the entire book.
Mm-hmm. Like, why is that?
Because there's a sense of anticipation. There's, like, lots of action being undertaken. you know, we're in the present tense, like actually going through the jungle. Like, this is kind of what I wanted when I started reading this book.
And interestingly, as far as I can really think, this is the first moment where Nova has wanted something and then had the means and ability to do that thing and then does the thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the only other real section of the book that compares is when she gets Constantino to feed the servants.
Oh yeah, that's the last time that she made a major decision and then got something done about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we're coming home again, back to when we thought, when we sort of saw Nova as the protagonist with agency who would do things in the story.
Yeah.
It is weird, isn't it?
It feels really weird.
Like, haven't you come, because I know, like, have you also come to have this feeling that Nova just can't, like, is not able to do things?
Yeah, like, I've come to think of her as being, you know, constantly at the mercy of, like, literally anything and anyone. So
I'll also.
Yeah, I mean, it feels uncomfortable to be reading this.
This isn't the person we know. Nova, this isn't you. Well, we have a little intervention for Nova. Nova, you're not who we knew you as.
You're looking for teak traps and it's too competent.
Also, looking for teak traps is an actual skill that the Academy has taught her that is relevant to her using telekinesis, unlike doing push-ups and shit.
Yeah, you know? Like, why are push-ups the main thing? I guess, I don't know, so Mal can, like, creep on her doing them? I have no idea.
Oh my god. Well, I can't believe we didn't even consider that, but that's probably what it is.
Yeah, right.
Fuck. God, I hate that so much more. It's the worst. It's the worst. Aww. After a moment, she realized she needn't have bothered. Nadanner hadn't anticipated a telekinetic. More fool him. She ripped the hatch off its hinges and tossed it aside. It was heavy, so it took some effort, but she managed it. Cocking her assault rifle, which she had brought as backup in case she encountered unexpected opposition or wild animals. Nova, kill the wild animals with your mind.
She just, like, threw some dirt off into, like, the sunset. Like, why can't she just, like, strangle a freaking lion or whatever with her brain?
Why is your bullets more powerful than your brain-killing technique that you use to be the most efficient killing machine in the gutter of all time?
She literally just ripped a hatch off his hinges and tossed it aside. Like, what else does she need?
I also like that she assumed that there would be telekinetic traps and starts looking for them. And she's like, oh, the only thing that could have stopped me isn't here. Cool. You know, like going into a dangerous situation, that's basically the only thing she has to be prepared for, right?
Yeah.
Is the way, if they set up a teak trap, that could be bad for me. But other than that, I'll just blow them up with my brain.
Yeah, she's just like, I'm going to go nuts now.
She leapt down into the hatch, having telepathically determined that Nadanner and his people weren't right under it.
It'd be so funny if Ralph Nader was the
guy. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this book was written before Ralph Nader was alive. So, yeah, I know. So, you know, this is a weird coincidence on Keith's part. But also, let me just point this out. She can telepathically determine that Nadanner and his people are not right under it. I mean, Nova's just going to slaughter these people, right? What could they possibly do against her?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Apart from, like, you know, if they have one of those things that Fagin had,
Yes,
I assume they must have somewhere, but right. You know, whether or not it's in reach or not, I guess is the question.
But that's literally the only thing that could stop Nova.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe that's what the gun is for. She shoots off the side screen. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
She shoots because she's like, okay, we've identified the one thing that can fuck with me.
Wait, for a second, I thought she said shoots off the ice cream. And I was like, she's got a gun with ice cream in it?
No.
Side screen. No. Side screen.
Side screen. Side screen. PSISCREEN. Side screen.
Not an ice cream gun.
Okay, this conversation that we're doing sounds exactly like a conversation that Fagin's underlings would have had between one another. I told you to bring me the size screen, you idiot. I did. This is ice cream. Yeah. Isn't that what you asked for? No, you dumb low brain. And then he like bonks him over the head. Oh no, why would you do that? Dude, Fagin's gonna have our heads for this.
Yeah, just like those guys. You know, the guys you're like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's right the two dudes.
The door, but like in the force field.
Yeah, trapped in inside the force field.
You can't even go to the bathroom.
Yeah. And they have like a sort of Abbott and Costello kind of, you know, ice cream, size screen bit that they do.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or maybe that's like at the, remember the talent show, the gutter talent show.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That they could do, like, maybe they do that bit, you know, as like a comedy routine, right. Yeah. That everyone's super into it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying size screen, ice cream, a lot of potential there. You can get a lot out of that one. They were about 10 meters to the right of the hatch, and they were very surprised to see a young blonde in a white with navy blue trim bodysuit holding a very large gun leap in through the hole where their hatch used to be. 12 people leapt to their feet, some less steadily than others. All of them had something to drink, except for Cephem. C-E-P-H-M-E. Except for Sapumi, who was allergic to alcohol, and many were very drunk. Again, just another random person. A second later, they were all dead. What the fuck is this book?
I don't know.
What the fuck is this book? Steve, who was looking forward to another opportunity to kill many people at once. Pratik, who joined up because Arcturix Menx killed his cousin and he wanted Menx dead in revenge. Sapimi, who hated not being able to drink with the others. Ivena, who loved hearing Nadanner's stories, even though she knew they were lies. Ray, who wanted to be back home on Halcyon with his girlfriend. Gerardo, who wished Nadanner had some real drinks tonight instead of his usual swill. Alexandra, who was starting to get hungry. Tom and Joan, who'd just gotten married. Joel, who'd just gotten divorced. Alessio and Peter Michael, the twins who secretly hated each other but never did anything apart. And David, who hated everybody and everything and joined Nadanner's cause so he could have a focus for all that rage. Bless you, Keith. It's another Keith paragraph.
He's like named everyone who's immediately died. Like, just, we're never going to get to know them, but Keith was like, no. Wait.
I wonder if Keith ever kills a character without naming them and giving them backstory.
I mean,
you know what I mean? Does Keith ever just go, yeah, someone just fucking ate shit? You know?
That's so admirable.
It's interesting. Like, I literally wonder if we could go back and trace it? Could we find a single instance of a person dying in this book without having been given a name and a personality?
I can tell you right now that hasn't happened. Unless, scan
in your mind through all 300 pages of StarCraft Ghost Nova and tell me if that happens.
The only case I could even think of is when he said that like there were a bunch of people who were like dying on the buses, remember?
I do remember that. He didn't say people were dying on, we added that they're dying in the buses.
No, okay? Like he said that there were like 50% of buses.
No. This is why you and I can't be trusted to make assessments of.
Wait, he didn't say that 50% of people die on buses?
He said that. No, we added that. He said that. My God, I can't believe you don't remember this. No, the book says that 50% of bus drivers are drunk or high.
Oh, yes. And then we extrapolated that to mean that that was an extremely high level of death rates. Okay.
This is so bad for our comprehension of the book because our additions to the story.
Our understanding have become of this book is something else than what it actually is.
I love that in your mind, Keith wrote this as, yeah, when you get on a bus, you flip a coin. Like, Keith literally sat down to sketch out official StarCraft canon and was like, I think it should be like a 50-50 when you get on a bus that you might die.
But I mean, 50% of bus drivers is still pretty crazy.
Oh, no, it's bad. It's really bad. It was bad enough that we spent an entire episode riffing on that. But Keith didn't literally write that half the people taking the bus in Tarsan has died.
Damn.
So this is why I'm saying that while I appreciate your conviction that Keith has not killed a single character without naming them, I do think a person would need to go back and reread through the book to double check that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe we can start over from the beginning and reread it. I just like it seems weird to me because there's got to just be like in action sci-fi stories like this, people just die.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's not it's not a thing that it's never weird that a character shows up and fires a gun and then dies. Right?
Yeah.
But in this book, I literally can't think of anybody who's died who wasn't given a whole personality and backstory and what they're looking for out of life.
I don't think it's happened.
Never mind. There was the section where Keith was just naming drug addicts, but those aren't necessarily people who died.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think it's happened.
That's weird, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Also, let me just say this. Every single one of these people makes an appearance in the theatrical performance of StarCraft Ghost Nova.
Yeah.
Every one of these characters.
Like they come and on stage Mike's, for 1 second.
Mike Stucka names each of them and relates their backstory to the audience. Like, okay, let me paint the scene for you. All right. So the stage is set like the inside of Cliff Nadaner's base. The hatch opens. Nova drops through the ceiling of the theater onto the stage. And there's all the people that are all sitting around, like, drinking and talking. And then she drops in, and then they all collapse dead, right?
Yeah.
They all just collapse on the stage.
Yeah.
And then Mike Stucka takes the stage, and he describes... Wait, who was the first one? Steve. Steve, the character, stands up from being collapsed, walks to center stage in a spotlight, drops on Steve.
Yeah.
Right? Then Mike Stucka begins to read. Steve, who was looking forward to another opportunity to kill many people at once. And the audience applauds.
Yeah.
And then the spotlight leaves. Steve returns to where he was and lays down. And then the next person gets up. Pratik, who joined up because Arcturus Gmengsk killed his cousin, and he wanted Gmengsk dead in revenge. And then so on and so forth, with every single one of them getting the spotlight.
That's actually very powerful.
The stage production of StarCraft Ghost Nova takes 4 days. Because, like, imagine if that happened with every single character in the entire story.
I mean, what are we if not a theatrical production of StarCraft Ghost Nova that has taken over a year to do?
What if we sat and wrote the stage play of StarCraft Ghost Nova from memory? How accurate do you think we could get it?
I don't know.
My guess is it would get more accurate over time.
I mean, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think personally, I feel like the theatrical production having all of these, like, you know, like, you know, momentary characters in the book actually, you know, become the friends we find along the way, you know, with the with the quote and whatnot, is actually, like, right, kind of in the spirit of our read through, right? It's like we like to acknowledge the fact that Keith is making us friends with everyone. Like, there's new friends and, like, we get to know about them and stuff.
I mean, the stage play will spend more time introducing and detailing back, like, side characters than it will actual plot.
How do how big do you think that the whole cast would be?
That's what it feels like. I know that's probably not what it actually is, but from reading this book, that's how it feels to me. It feels like more time would be spent on those back characters.
Yeah. I mean, like...
Well, here's the other thing, is that if Keith were writing this, and if every single side character was getting time in the spotlight for Mike Stucco to read their backstory, Keith would probably write a lot more into each of those characters.
Yeah.
Right? I imagine him being like, okay, well, now I have an opportunity to really flesh it out.
Yeah.
The constraints of my 300 pages for StarCraft Ghost Nova couldn't contain everything that I knew was there for all of these characters.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked before about, like, what we think Keith's constraints were writing this book. And obviously he couldn't go too far into what the alleged game was. So he's only got so many things to work with. Among those are, like, the nameless faces that die in the book, right? So,
yeah,
I mean, he gets to name and create those people. Whereas,
yeah,
I mean, in video games, normally you don't get to know that the guy's name was Steve and that he had a backstory. You just kill him.
Right. Maybe Keith was hoping that it would encourage Blizzard to, like, name all of the aliens in the video game version of StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, like, this Zerg is called Steve, and he has children, and they're all, like, little hatchlings.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. All right, so we have all these people, and then she killed all of them in a second. The first time she deliberately killed someone, the pitcher, it had taken a supreme effort. Ursiti, the cop who'd been skimming, had been even more difficult. I don't remember who that is.
Me either.
Now, though, killing 13 people was easier than snapping fingers. Nova hadn't wanted to kill anymore, but she knew there was no choice. Besides, these slikes targeted my family. Did she just get that good from just all the people that that Fagin made her kill?
I guess that's the implication of the whole book, right? Is that all of this made her great at killing people?
Because she was with Fagin for 6 months, but she's been at the Ghost Academy for 2.5 years, right?
Yeah.
So, like, has she been killing people at the Ghost Academy?
I mean, she can't have been.
But that's what I'm saying, right?
You know, like, should they, like, ship in Zerglings just so that they can, like, practice or whatnot? Like,
but that can't be the same. Zerglings, they got tiny brains, you know? Itsy-bitsy animal brains. Human brain. That's a whole other...
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, this has to be a lore thing. There has to be a thing about, do Ghost Academy recruits murder humans as a, because it, okay, imagine, all right, imagine, okay, Nova has a particular backstory where she was made to be a murder slave or whatever. Probably not how most kids get into the Ghost Academy, right? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, if you're just a psychic and you're like, I'm going to go to the Ghost Academy, you know, off you go, you know, Timmy, have a good time at Ghost Academy school. Okay, we're going to do lots of push-ups. Okay, great. I'm feeling real good. All right, Timmy, now go into the jungle and murder 13 people with your mind. That would be, that's a pretty wild thing to ask a person who hasn't been killing as a part of their school studies, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to ask of anyone, really.
It's a lot to ask of anyone, like, let's be clear. But what I'm saying is, they must be killing people at Ghost Academy. They have to be.
Yeah,
they have to be killing people.
Yeah.
They have to be killing people,
yeah,
at Ghost Academy.
Yeah, they've got to be doing something like that, yeah.
So who are they killing?
I don't know, enemies of the state.
Shitty Billy.
Shitty Billy.
That's why they bring people like Shitty Billy. is to train the other more competent students to kill.
I'm trying to look on the Ghost Nova, the StarCraft wiki about the Ghost Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the only thing that I've managed to actually find about it is, so far, is the Ghost Academy automatically produces nuclear missiles for no cost over a period of 5 minutes.
What?
Yeah, like, what? Like, no cost. Nuclear missiles. Like,
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, in five.
Why not 0 minutes? What's happening for 5 minutes that costs nothing? What's this 5 minute long process?
It's something that happens in Nova Covert Ops. Oh, StarCraft II Nova Covert Ops is a mission pack for StarCraft II. Is Nova in it? Oh, the pack concluded Nova's story.
Oh, okay.
So it is part of Nova's arc.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's all about nukes. So there you go.
Yeah. StarCraft Ghost Nova is not about nukes. StarCraft Ghost Nova is about class warfare. So.
Yeah.
The only one who hadn't risen was also the only one she didn't kill. This was Cliff Nadanner. a tall, broad-shouldered man. With receding dark brown hair and a hook nose, Nadanner looked like all that much. But she knew better. She felt his hatred for the governments of humanity, making no real distinction between the Confederacy and the Dominion. He was a self-proclaimed anarchist, though he didn't believe in the true chaos that was required for proper anarchy. Okay, see, this is what I'm saying. This definition of anarchy... not in Clueless, right? Not as far as I'm seeing.
No evidence.
No one in Clueless mentions a blurring of the distinction between the Confederacy and the Dominion, right? To my knowledge.
I mean, that's not strictly the definition of an anarchist, but okay. Okay.
Do you remember in Clueless when the dad says it takes 20 minutes to get from the Confederacy to the Dominion?
I mean, he said something, I don't know, similar.
Most of all, though, she felt his fear. He looked around at the corpses suddenly at his feet, blood oozing out of every orifice in their heads, then looked frantically up at her. What are you? She smiled and started walking slowly toward where he sat. I'm what you made me, Cliff Nadanner. I'm the product of your psychosis. You hate the idea of anybody being more successful than you, so you take it out on them. Koji at the factory wins Employee of the Month more than you. So you arranged for the accident that crippled him. But it didn't work. They just gave the award to Mika instead. So you joined the Marines. But you couldn't succeed there either. Passed over for promotion 6 times. Then they drummed you out. With nowhere left to go, you formed your own little band of rebels. But never got Mengsk's press. There were the Sons of Korhal, and then the other guys. Then Mengsk actually did what you wanted to do. He took over. I don't know what any of this is really
about. This is deep in some lore shit, you know?
Mike Stucka has been describing all of this for about 10 minutes of stage time.
All right.
Again, Nate Anner asked, "What are you?" "You ordered the destruction of the Terra family. You managed to turn Edward Peters against them. But you made one mistake, Cliff. You left one of them alive." Realization dawned on Nadanner's face. "Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. You're the one who..." "Yes, Cliff." She had walked to within a meter of him now, and Nadanner was eyeing her assault rifle warily. "I'm the one who killed all your people. I killed Edward and Gustavo and Adam and Tish and Jeffrey. And all the other ones that you sent to kill my family. Because you did that, I eventually became the very ghost that the Dominion has assigned to finally put an end to your pathetic existence." Falling out of his chair, Nadanner got on his knees and clasped his fists together. Tears were streaming down his cheeks. "Please, no, I'm begging you, don't kill me. I'll do anything, please. I'll do it. Just ask. It's yours." I do think it's probably worth pointing out here that they would have sent someone to kill him, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like him blowing up the Terra family is... it's not like him leaving Nova alive is why he's dying right now.
Like, all this is a massive coincidence.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Unless it isn't.
Well, I mean,
no, it probably is. You know, it probably is.
Keith's the one thing, you know, in common here. It's not a coincidence, Keith? Because Keith has made it happen.
Again, StarCraft Goes Nova is not a documentary. Worth clarifying. Let me see. Where are we? I'm wondering if this is a good place to bookmark it.
Yeah, and, I think so.
And leave it so that we can... Because, I mean, we read like a whole 5 pages today. We might just finish the book next time. Uh-oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Crazy.
Is that weird?
It's weird. Really weird.
Oh, how about this? In the theatrical performance, they take breaks every... Like, at all the points where we've taken breaks in the book is a point where there's, like, an intermission in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of
the
performance. Yeah, for a week, exactly. Then they all come back next week. Mike Stucka lives on stage reporting for the USA Today from the stage for the whole entire week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, cool. Let's bookmark it there. We'll find out what happens to Cliff Nadanner. I don't know about
you, but
I'm betting Nova lets him go.
Yeah, Nova might let him go. I would just say we should do like a live version of this at GDC 1 year.
What do you mean by a live version of this? Describe that for me.
Like, we should just like turn up with a copy of StarCraft Ghost Nova, but abridged, and then just like read it aloud.
Okay, when you say an abridged version of StarCraft Ghost Nova, there's so much packed into that sentence. Who's abridging StarCraft Ghost Nova?
Like, we could just take like our favorite pages and then smush them together.
Yeah, that audience is really going to get it.
We're going to get three people, but three people will be laughing.
But here's the problem. We don't read the book anyway on this podcast.
I know, but then that's why they would come.
To hear us actually read the book?
Yes.
But we wouldn't even be reading the book. We'd be reading the abridged version of the book.
We'd be reading the abridged version and then also talking about the abridged version and then continuing reading the abridged version.
Okay, hang on. Okay, you said that they'll enjoy listening to it because they're used to the long form version of it. So they'll enjoy just listening to us reading the book, right? Yeah. Which means that they're already listeners of StarCraft Ghost Nova.
Yeah.
Which means that they've already listened to us. Why would they've already heard us do the whole thing? Wouldn't we make new content for the people who come to see us?
I mean, we could, but like, isn't the joy of this the fact that like we have very stupid ideas about what we're reading and it could be anything? And even if we read this book over again, we'd have different stupid ideas.
So our live version of the Inspirational Quarterly is the opposite of what we actually do on the podcast.
No, it's kind of the same. Except
here's another idea. What if we do a live performance of the Inspirational Quarterly and we just get up on stage and play an episode from the Inspirational Quarterly
over the speakers. And then do like a meta commentary Mike Stucca version?
If we can get Mike Stucca to comment his way through through a live performance of a taped episode of the Inspirational Quarterly.
Yeah.
That would be worth it. That would be worth it. But the version of this where we just get up on stage and read an abridged version of StarCraft Ghost Nova, I don't know, man. I think they'd rather hear us like actually. I mean, I guess we could talk about the abridgment, the nature of the abridgment, like where we chose to abridge it.
Yeah.
So that's what we would talk about.
Yeah. I mean, we could also like, you know, make Jeffrey's story slightly bigger.
Okay. So when you say abridged, what you mean is rewritten.
Yeah, we should totally rewrite the book. Okay,
we rewrite StarCraft Goes Nova, and then we get up on stage and read our version of it and stop to comment on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. What if we put this in the middle of the theatrical version of StarCraft Goes Nova? Middle of the performance, we get up and do a reading of our rewritten version of StarCraft.
I think that would be unfair on the audience. They would be trapped in there for like maybe 3 years. So.
Yeah, that is definitely true. That's definitely true. But again, I can't emphasize this enough. Art is not for the audience.
Right.
Art is for us. And if you
Well, it's are... clear with their listenership that is true.
Yeah, that's for fucking sure. If you're still listening to this podcast, what's wrong with you? Why are you here? It's beyond me. I don't know. I don't know why you're here. But thank you. But thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Even though whatever the
we're puzzled about the nature of your being here.
All right. That's it. Kara, what did we learn this week?
What did we learn? We learned that you know, Keith expects us to go to remember the beginning of the book.
I like the idea that maybe the way Keith imagines a person reading this book is like every time they get to a certain, like every time they stop, when they begin rereading again, they just casually reread through the entire book up to that point just to freshen it up in their minds.
Yeah, I mean, that is actually, you know, that's audience participation, isn't it? It's like it's a requirement from your audience to be very active readers.
Yes. Yes, right.
Which, you know, I salute you, Keith.
Yeah, no, it's asking real work of the audience.
Yeah.
This week we did meet a lot of new friends, and they all died. All of them died.
They died immediately in one second.
All of them died immediately. All right. That's all I got. Join us next time on the Inspirational Quarterly for maybe the ending of the book. But I don't even know if that's really actually the case. Because it could easily be 3 or 4 more episodes before the end of the book. But
and
we do have five pages left. So I'll let you guess, speculate how many episodes we have before the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we should make a pool.
Yeah, email us at theinspirationalquarterly@gmail.com to tell us how many episodes you think are going to be left before we finish the book. That's all I got. There's nothing left to say.
Well,
this week.
Thank you, Keith.
Thank you, Keith, as always. And we will send you out with the most elegant of performances that could possibly accompany this theatrical presentation of StarCraft Ghost Nova. That's right. It is our friends, the Warp Drive.